Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It has been 25 years since the last official high school game of six-on-six basketball was played in the state. This hour will remember the game of six-on-six girls basketball and the unique culture that surrounded it. And if you were part of that culture, we want to hear your stories, your experiences. You can join us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And coming up a little later this hour, I'll talk with the creator and producer of Six on Six, the musical, also the director of an upcoming performance in Urbandale. But first, a new traveling exhibit from the Iowa Women's Archives explores the history of six-on-six basketball in the state, and it's also giving women an opportunity to share their stories. The exhibit is traveling the state right now along with the Smithsonian Institution's Museum on Main Street Hometown Teams exhibition. It's in Guthrie Center right now through August 5th, and then we'll move on to Jefferson and Ames and Conrad after that. And with me now are two of the women behind the exhibit. Karen Mason is curator for the Iowa Women's Archives at the University of Iowa. Hello, Karen.
Hi, Charity.
Welcome back to the show.
Nice to be here.
And Jennifer Sterling is here, lecturer in American Studies at the University of Iowa and also one of the curators of this exhibit. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And now, 25 years ago, that last game of six-on-six girls basketball was played in the state. That was also an important year for the Iowa Women's Archives as well, wasn't it, Karen?
Yes, it was the year after the Iowa Women's Archives was founded. So I arrived in Iowa just in time to see six-on-six basketball fade from the scene. And I had never heard of six-on-six basketball, being from Minnesota. And so I was very fascinated with it. And we received a few collections for the archives early on because of all the publicity surrounding the end of six-on-six.
Well, and what made you want to do an exhibit specifically about six-on-six basketball?
Well, other than my own love of sports. It was, we have been celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Iowa Women's Archives throughout the year, starting last a year ago in Iowa City. We've had several exhibits and symposia, all located right here on campus in Iowa City. But the Iowa Women's Archives is a resource for the entire state, and we have collections representing women from across the state. People have been so generous, and we wanted to both give back to the rest of the state and also try to learn more about the rest of the state. So by having a traveling exhibit, we travel around the state, and we can bring this 25th anniversary to people outside of Iowa City.
And you've also been holding events to help collect stories about women, from women and other people who were part of this community that surrounded six-on-six basketball, right?
Right. At each of the six sites where the Smithsonian Hometown Teams exhibit is, we have been giving talks and also having collecting days where people bring in photos and scrapbooks and patches and other memorabilia and either donate them or just tell us about them. And that's been really fun. We've had a really good response to that. And so we're really filling out some of the gaps in the Iowa Women's Archives collections on 6-on-6.
Nice. Well, and I know when you start talking to people who played 6-on-6 or were part of that culture, people just kind of light up. They have, yes, a lot to share. And Jennifer, you did not come into this as someone who didn't know a whole lot about 6-on-6. You actually played, right?
I did play 6-on-6. So I am one of the transition athletes. I played 2 years, my first 2 years in high school. I played 6-on-6, and then the last 2 years I played 5-on-5. So I grew up in a small town in southeast Iowa, Fremont, Iowa, and I played at Eddyville-Blakesburg, one of the consolidation hyphenated schools, and that was my experience. And we are starting to hear more about women that have experiences like myself, 1 year 6-on-6, 3 years 5-on-5, you know, similar stories.
So take us back in time. And first, for people who haven't heard of 6-on-6, women's basketball or haven't heard about it for a very long time. Remind us of what makes this game unique.
Well, the rules of 6-on-6 basketball is what makes it unique. So it's a modified sport of basketball as we know it now and as men have always known it, the 5-on-5 game. And initially, 6-on-6 started as a three-court game, and it eventually progressed to a two-court game.
And then, and so when you say three-court, that the court that we're familiar with in basketball was divided into three different segments at first.
Correct, yes. And sometimes there were six people that played across those three courts, so two in the middle, two on either side. Sometimes there was a rover that could sort of like soccer, you could move up and down the court. And that game changed in the 1930s to a two-court game. So women progressed, they were able to move across the court a little bit more freely. And the two-court game, there were three forwards on one side and then the opposing team's guards and then three guards on one side and the opposing team's forwards. And you couldn't cross the center line. And then in Iowa in particular, we had a two-dribble rule.
Oh, that was just an Iowa thing.
Not always just in Iowa, but there were different variations of the game. And Iowa's, we've started talking to people, especially at Guthrie Center last weekend. We were talking to people about how in Texas they had unlimited dribble. And so they would go down and play teams in Texas or people would move to Texas and they would not be able to. It was a different game for them. And
all right. So the two dribble rule meant what?
You could dribble twice, and that is it. And then you would have to stop, and you'd have to pass to the next person.
Now, the game was designed so that girls could play it, the idea being that girls were not as strong and tough as boys, so it was supposed to be a lower-impact game. Although, and that was absolutely true, not the part about girls being weaker, but the part about it being a lower-impact game, but the culture that grew up around 6-on-6 girls basketball, I mean, it was a highly competitive, highly skilled game. This was not an easy game.
No, it was not. And when you talk to the women that played it, it was still a lot of conditioning that was involved. It was still a very fast-paced game. It just wasn't a fast-paced dribbling game. It was a fast-paced passing game. And it was still a rough game. You know, girls wear knee pads for a reason. And it wasn't because they bruised more easily. It was because it was a rough game.
So when did 6-on-6 start to be played in Iowa?
It started in... So we know that the first state tournament was in 1920. We know that girls were playing at the turn of the century. And but we know that nationally people didn't play until the 30s. So we are still looking for hard evidence that 6-on-6 wasn't played until the 30s here. But that's what we would assume.
Well, was played until the 30s. Well, we have a picture of my grandmother playing in 1918 in Forest City High School. Mm-hmm. And so she played a 6-on-6 game. Okay. And we have a picture of the court with her, clearly a practice with the woman coach and the girls standing in the positions where they would be in each of the three sections.
Yeah.
So we know.
So I suppose I should clarify, we're not sure if it's the three-court or the two-court game when that switch happened in Iowa. But girls have been playing 6-on-6, some variation of it.
And it wasn't without controversy, even though it was supposed to be a lower impact game. I mean, girls really had to fight for the right to even play basketball, right?
Right. In fact, there was a story of the girls in Newhall, Iowa, in the when they were junior high girls, the town was going to get rid of basketball. This would have been the early 20s. And the girls were so upset that they got on their ponies and they rode from town, from farm to farm and house to house and collected signatures on a petition to the school to keep the game. And in fact, the school district did keep the game, and those girls went on to win the state championship in 1927.
Wow. So some people may be familiar with the history of why we have a separate high school athletic association for boys and for girls in this state. And 6-on-6 girls basketball plays a really important role in that, right?
Correct. So in the mid-1920s, so the Iowa High School Athletic Association was the one that initiated the tournaments in the early 20s. And by the mid-20s, by the mid-1920s, there was a lot of controversy around whether girls should be playing competitive basketball and whether they should be playing, focusing on just one sport. And so, and maybe you can talk a little bit more about the physical educators, the role in that.
Right. Well, the physical educators were a little concerned that the female physical educators worried that both they wanted all girls to play sports, and they felt like the focus on basketball would eliminate the chance for a lot of girls to play. And so they wanted a non-competitive form of basketball. They also didn't want girls to be exploited by competition. So, and that affected more the large cities than the small towns.
So there was a lot of controversy. There was a lot of arguing.
Absolutely, and it continued on in different various forums throughout the 1900s. So at different phases, as basketball grew, as opportunities for girls grew, then there were different controversies to be had. But yes, 1925 was when the two groups splintered because of girls' basketball. The Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union kept the tournaments going and decided to have a dedicated union for girls.
And 6-on-6 girls basketball, I mean, for a while it was the only sport at a lot of schools that girls could participate in at all. But it also gained this really incredible following. I mean, and maybe because it was the only sport that girls could participate in, but there are so many stories of, I mean, really the pageantry that surrounds 6-on-6 girls basketball. It must be so much fun to look back and see photos of that. And I mean, towns shutting down so they could follow their girls team to the state tournament.
That's true. And it's been wonderful to hear stories from some of the women that we've talked to about how the fans would line up all the way down the block, three abreast, to get into the games when they were playing their biggest rivals, and how when they went to the state tournament, Guthrie Center, there was a 30-mile caravan that met them halfway back from Des Moines.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the history of 6-on-6 girls basketball this hour. There's a new traveling exhibit from the Iowa Women's Archives traveling the state right now, exploring this history. Karin Mason and Jennifer Sterling are with me. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are taking a look back at the game of 6-on-6 girls basketball and the unique culture that surrounded it. A little bit later in the hour, I'm going to talk about the creator and producer of 6-on-6, the musical. There's an upcoming performance in Urbandale in August. With me right now, I have Karin Mason, curator for the Iowa Women's Archives at the University of Iowa, and Jennifer Sterling, lecturer in American Studies at the University of Iowa. She is also one of the curators for a new traveling exhibit from the Iowa Women's Archives that explores the history of 6-on-6 basketball in the state. It's traveling along with the Smithsonian Institution's Museum on Main Street Hometown Teams exhibition. It's in Guthrie Center right now through August 5th, moving then to Jefferson, Ames, and Conrad after that. And also in a few minutes, we'll talk to the president of Granny Basketball, which is a league keeping the game of 6-on-6 alive. But I would love for the two of you to give me, I mentioned the kind of pageantry, the kind of excitement around 6-on-6 girls basketball. And I don't think we've seen anything like that since for girls sports in high school. But paint a picture for me as you've looked through the archives, as you've collected the stories. What was it like, that kind of energy, that kind of excitement? All right, Karin first.
Okay. Well, I think the energy and excitement was, and you have to give Ewing Cooley credit for this. He was a longtime executive secretary / director of the Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union, and he's been called the P.T. Barnum of hoops. And he really had a vision of how to make this a pageant, really. So not only did the state tournaments have the games and the families of the people who played in the tournaments would come, of the girls who played in the tournaments would come to the Drake or to Vets, but also he invited bands to come and dance teams. And so all of their families would come too. So Vets Arena was packed for the tournaments. And there would be, you could probably talk about this better, Jen, but there were inductions into the Hall of Fame. There were, there was, what is it, the Parade of States or
Parade of Champions. Each of the teams that, and this happened, so in the mid-1950s, we started adding sports. And so the Parade of Champions would be the champions of each of the different teams in the state. But yes, a lot of people talk about the boys and men in tuxedos that would sweep the floors. The jazz bands were often, sort of state qualifying jazz bands from different schools around the state. So there was a sort of broader support of high schools and their champions, not just their sporting champions. And yes, of course, the Hall of Fame inductions were saved for, center court at the state tournament every year. So there's sort of the pageantry that went around state. And it should be mentioned that it wasn't just the... So the teams that went, of course, were, sort of treated like queens is often the word that's thrown around. But they got there and they stayed at these hotels. And that's a lot of the stories that we hear from women, stayed at these hotels and went to these fancy breakfasts and that the union sort of put on for them. But then also people often... So for me, for example, I played in the early 90s and I would go to state. We would get out of school to go to the state tournament. So it was everyone that sort of experienced that. So all girls teams, whether they qualified for state, it was very common practice for them to sort of attend state for the week and sort of get to be part of that pageantry, regardless of whether they qualified or not.
And looking through some of the amazing photos, I think we need to talk about the uniforms. I mean, the girls' uniforms were a sight to behold as well through time. And, of course, they evolved through time. But I think about the 1950s where the uniforms were all satin and shiny. And, of course, all of the girls played in skirts. Are you collecting some of those artifacts? Are people giving you their uniforms?
No, not yet. Not yet. We may receive some uniforms. If they still exist. Sometimes they were made into other objects later on, pillowcases,
right,
and that sort of thing. But sometimes the mothers would make them. Sometimes it depends. I think it probably depended a little bit on how well the team was doing, how much the town or the school district put into having uniforms professionally made. I don't know when that changed either.
So when you're traveling around and you're inviting women to come share their stories, what are you asking them to bring to you? What are you hoping to collect in this effort?
Well, we're looking for photographs. We're looking for how that game was played, not only at the tournament level, but also at the local level and the various levels of tournaments, maybe, or... We're actually interested, too, in the stories of girls and women, who never went to a state tournament, but really found that basketball was an important part of their lives, too. So we're actually asking people to write up little stories about their experiences, tell us when they played and what it meant to them to play. We had a couple of women who came to talk with us in Mount Vernon, who said, we were in this tiny town. There was nothing to do. Basketball was it, and we loved it. And so they weren't a great team, but it was a fun experience for them. So a variety of things, some memorabilia. We'd love to have some pennants. We don't have any pennants. We have some patches for letter sweaters for girls who went to the tournament.
And you're hoping that even if people aren't prepared to part with these items, that they will think of the Iowa Women's Archives later on as well,
sure,
as people pass away. And
absolutely.
To keep these collections intact.
Right. A lot of women or family members find that there isn't anyone else who's really interested in it in the next generation, and they feel very proud of it, and it's an important part of their lives.
So. Well, you are welcome to join your story or to share your stories this hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. I want to bring Barb Tomlinson Trammell into the conversation now. She is the president of Granny Basketball. It's a basketball league for women 50 and over that's keeping the game of 6-on-6 alive. Hello, Barb.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show.
Okay, thank you.
And before we talk about Granny Basketball, I want to talk about when you played 6-on-6. Tell me about your basketball career.
Okay. Well, I actually probably started playing when I was about 3. My dad was a girls' basketball coach in the 40s and 50s, and so I sort of grew up in a gym and teased on a basketball. I guess the 6-on-6 phenomenon was just always a part of my life. I didn't know that it wasn't like that everywhere. We grew up wanting to be like the high school girls and playing basketball, and, of course, everybody's big focus was going to the state tournament. When I played, we didn't ever make it to the state tournament, but my dad's team in 1952, he was coaching at Olin, Iowa, and they went to state and lost in their first game. But there's a big, long story about they were the hard luck team of the tournament. Just before they were ready to go to the tournament, several of his players came down with the measles or mumps or something.
Oh, no.
And couldn't go. And so they had to play their second string throughout the game. And I think they lost by maybe 4 points or something like that. And so there's always, and then, you know, all the towns always had a big trail of cars that met the teams when they came back from the state. Well, the Olin people there wanted to do that, but there was this huge snowstorm, and nobody could get out of their driveway, and so they didn't even get to have their big parade coming back into town.
Oh, no.
So they were really a hard luck team. When I played with my sister, Linda, who was a year older than I was, and we were pretty mediocre. I was so little in high school, you know, I really had to work hard to maintain 100 pounds. And but we played together, and she was mainly the big scorer because we had a, you know, like somebody said earlier, that it was a passing game, and that's what it was. So since I was so small, I was out in front, excuse me, all the time, and passed in to the bigger forwards underneath the basket. And but this one game, we were playing Ledyard, and it was Ringsted, and they double-teamed my sister so that she couldn't get the ball. And so I was open out in front, excuse me, and fired away. And in that game, I scored my career high, which was 41 points.
Wow.
And her career high was 39. So I like to rub that in a lot.
So,
and of course, we have all my dad's memorabilia from when he was a coach, and he wrote a book about his experiences. He and I wrote a book, and he had a lot of the history of basketball, and starting from when he saw his first girls' game in 1920 in Bond Rand, Iowa, and explained the history and why people were so enthralled with girls' basketball rather than boys.
Well, why did he think people were so enthralled?
Well, he said that at that time the gyms were so small and had furnaces on the end, and, you know, people banked off the walls and stuff like that. But anyway, when you get 10 guys on a court, everybody's running up and down, and nobody could tell what was going on. And but the girls, because it was a slower game and you could focus your attention on one end of the court or the other, people liked watching better. And he explained also that it was the 1920s and women were just gaining some kind of power, as it were, and that the focus was on women and what all they could do. And there was there has always been, he said, a lot of controversy about women and participating, and they didn't think that women should play competitively because it was too rough and they would injure their reproductive systems. And, of course, all the people in Iowa who were on farms, they knew that women who were producing six or eight kids weren't affected by basketball or any other activity. And they were used to slinging bales and slopping hogs and so forth. And so they just people just latched onto it because of those factors, I think, is the just the climate at the time of noticing women and watching a game that they could understand.
Right.
And,
well, Barb, thinking back on your time playing six-on-six girls basketball, you know, a lot of people today don't know very much about the sport. A lot of people don't necessarily remember the sport. What would you want people to know about what made this time and this sport so special?
I think it was just because there wasn't anything else going on that was different and something that people, it was local. It was their local girls. I'm sure it had something to do with there were some farmers who didn't have any boys and they had girls. And they realized that girls were just as important as the boys were. And they promoted that. They liked watching their girls play. And at least when I watched the boys' games playing, it did seem very confusing to me. There was there was just a lot of running around and charging. And
so maybe it was partly just a lack of distractions that made
so.
This a special
yeah.
time and a special game.
Right, and of course, girls didn't have any other sports. They only had basketball, and you know that was the entertainment. There wasn't a lot of entertainment back then. You know, it took them 8 hours from Bondurant to get to Des Moines. You know, they had to take their horse to this other station, and then they took a bus in, and then a train, and you know, it was an all day thing to go anywhere. And so everything that they did was local. And so they focused on what they had available.
So when six-on-six girls basketball ended, I mean, the culture had obviously changed pretty dramatically already at that time. By 1993, a lot of schools had stopped playing six-on-six. There wasn't as much attention, as much focus. Barb, do you remember how you felt when that last game was played? Was that hard for you?
Well, everybody that I knew was very sad, and we didn't know why it had to change, I think. Of course, I graduated in 62. I'm 73 now, so I wasn't really involved in that controversy. A lot of people were just disappointed, I think, and, you know, had to go through a grieving process. I mean, we understood the girls that wanted to play, but most of us felt that there were many more girls who played that, you know, weren't college caliber that would now miss out on having the experience in playing. You know, back then everybody played. 70% of the girls played in high school, and you didn't have to be 6'2 and have a wingspan of 7 feet and all that kind of stuff. And so many more girls, even though they weren't that athletic, had an opportunity to play. And, of course, now that's not so true.
Right. Although you're giving women an opportunity to play the game with granny basketball. Barb, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Yes. The granny team plays the three-court variety, I should say.
All right. So you go back pre-1935 and play even a little bit slower game, not as much running. Barb, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All right, Barb Tomlinson-Trammell, she is president of Granny Basketball. We have 1 minute left, and Jennifer, I'd love to ask you, I mean, documenting the end of six-on-six basketball is also part of this exhibit. It's something that you're talking to people about as well. What kinds of stories are you hearing about how people felt when this ended?
Well, I think a lot of the women that come and talk to us were women that were girls playing 6-on-6 and that were very close to the game. And so we are hearing a lot of stories about the that are lamenting the end of 6-on-6. But we are often hearing stories about women who didn't have the opportunity to play, or the moms that went to the board meetings, the school board meetings, and were petitioning for their girls to get to play, especially at the larger schools who didn't often start playing until after the passage of Title IX in the 70s. So, I think that some of the stories we're starting to hear and really looking for stories for women coaches. This is a story we don't hear very often as well. And just the stories of girls that got to play in other ways, like the Girls Recreation Association.
So people who have stories to share should get in touch with the Iowa Women's Archives. You also have an event coming up in Ames, Saturday, October 6th, an opportunity for people to share at the Ames Public Library. Karen Mason and Jennifer Sterling, curators of the exhibit from the Iowa Women's Archives, exploring the history of 6-on-6 basketball. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. If 6-on-6 girls basketball could inspire so much nostalgia, loyalty, and fanfare in its day, then I guess it's no surprise that it could also inspire a musical. 6-on-6, the musical, was just performed in Guthrie Center last week, and another production will take place in Urbandale in August. It's a production of Urbandale Community Theater and Epic Stage Productions, August 3rd through August 12th. And let's get a little taste of this show with the song 6-on-6.
Perhaps I should start with a brief history lesson. Many years ago, when basketball was very new, the game was modified
so the fair sex could play it too.
It caught on across the land, but as the years went by, it could not withstand the growing demand for equal rights. Soon this version of the game began to disappear.
Its time has come and gone,
was the message shouted loud and clear. Nowhere did the game survive,
except right here where it continues to thrive.
And now we're the only state that plays.
Just a little taste of the musical 6-on-6, the musical about 6-on-6 girls basketball. Robert Ford is the creator and he's the producer of the upcoming show for 6-on-6, the musical. He's with us now from Des Moines. Hello, Robert.
Hi, Charity.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And you may be familiar with Robert Ford's work from Caucus, the musical, as well. And Robert, tell me what your inspiration was for writing a show about 6-on-6 girls basketball.
Well, I was one of those big city kids growing up in Fort Dodge, and so we didn't get this sport until the mid-70s as well, since it was mostly a small-town sport up until that point. And it wasn't until 1978 when my high school, Fort Dodge St. Edmund, made it to the state tournament and was the Cinderella team that year that I really got a taste of what 6-on-6 was all about, and especially the state tournament itself. And then I really didn't pay any attention to 6-on-6 much beyond that until the mid-80s, when a friend of mine, Lana, invited me to go see Lynn Lorenzen play at the state tournament in the mid-80s. And we had to buy scalpers tickets to see the game, which is sort of amazing in itself that you would have to buy scalpers tickets to see a high school basketball game. And my seat was in the top row of Vets Auditorium. And from that perspective, I just started to see what an incredible drama this was. There was conflict on the court. There was conflict in the stands. There was pageantry. There was so much that just screamed, this needs to be a musical. And I uttered those words that night and went home and started working on a musical at that point. So it was even before the game ended when the show was created.
And how many years did you spend writing 6-on-6, the musical?
It's interesting because I said it sometime in the near future because the game had not yet ended yet, but I was predicting that it would eventually, but because by that time they'd already instituted the 5-on-5 game, so they gave the girls the option in the state. So I was setting the play sometime in the near future, and by the time we ever did a first reading of the play, the game had come to an end in 93, so I had to go back and revise it a little bit and said, sometime in the recent past.
So Now, you saw all that. You thought this needs to be a musical. I think maybe you were the only person to think that this needs to be a musical. Why? Why did you think that was so important?
You know, that's often the first response is, really? A musical about 6 on 6? Well, just because, like I said, there's so much conflict. There's so much history and tradition associated with the game. But there's also all these great drama moments. There's the conflicts on the floor, you know, between the players and the teams. But there was also the Title IX controversy and all of that. And so the musical really addresses all of those things, the history, the tradition, the great players of 6-on-6, and the Title IX controversy that ultimately sort of brought an end to the game or saw, you know, sort of pushed it on its way to the end.
Well, I want to bring the director of this upcoming production into the conversation as well. Allison Schaefer is here, director of 6-on-6, the musical. Hello, Allison.
Hello, Charity. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Allison.
Thank you so much for being here. And I think the two of you have kind of a funny story about the first time you sat down to talk about this show. Allison, can you tell me what happened?
Well, Robert, chime in, because it really, truly is his story. But Robert and I had not worked together and met at a coffee shop to discuss the possibility of choreographing the show for the first time. And chatted away, and Robert was explaining the game to me, just wanted to make sure I knew what I was getting into, and he pulled out a book that he said was his biggest reference point for writing the musical. It's called From 6-on-6 to Full Court Press, and he pulled the book out and was chatting a little bit longer, and I said to him, well, that's me on the cover. It's a picture of when my basketball team, Fairfield Trojanettes, made it to state in 1982. And you can see me on the cover, not my face, but it's definitely my number, trying to pull down a rebound.
So tell me a little bit about your basketball career, Allison.
Absolutely. Yeah. I started playing in grade school and would do the summer camps. And our coach was really good about developmental camps and programs, and played all the way through high school and my senior year. We've had many good teams from Fairfield in the past, but just couldn't quite break that state tournament barrier. But we happened to do so my senior year. So it was an incredible thrill to experience that. And little did I know, it would relate many years later in the form of a musical.
Well, and you, I mean, you're a choreographer. This is what you do for a living. Was there something special about the idea of doing the choreography for 6-on-6, the musical?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges and one of the most fun challenges has been trying to incorporate basketball moves in a theatrical fashion. One of the opening numbers of the show is called 6-on-6, where the game is described, which is what you played a little earlier. And so coordinating plays with particular moves and only two dribbles in a certain time frame with the music has been a really fun challenge. And one other thing that we've been working on, too, is developing actors, dancers, and singers into basketball players.
So how do you do that?
Well, we've had a couple of workshops, and I've enlisted the help of my son, Ethan, who is also a basketball player. So he and I have taken the athletes through their paces with dribbling and pivots and passes and shooting and layups and all kinds of stuff like that.
Wow. So, all right, Robert, let's talk a little bit more about the musical itself. Now, first of all, when was it first produced?
The first time it was produced was in 2005 at Iowa Central Community College in Fort Dodge, and then we did another production of it here in 2009. But I really want to emphasize that this production is new in a lot of ways. It is the first time we're presenting this new version of the show. I've done significant rewrites and added some songs and added some characters, and we've changed quite a few things from the production before. So it will be fresh and new to people that may have seen the show before.
All right. Well, tell me a little bit, and you can just tell me about this version, but what's the plot line?
There are several different plot lines. We are initially introduced to a player that her name is Jo Lynn in the show. And she is on track to break the all-time national scoring record, which is based on several different Iowa players in the past, loosely based. I didn't do interviews or anything like that, but there were several Iowa girls that broke national scoring records. And so the character of Jo Lynn, we see her from beginning to end, how she just starts out as just a girl wanting to, you know, play basketball, enjoying playing basketball, but never having any aspirations to be a national scoring record holder or anything else. She just wants to have fun playing basketball, and she enjoys it. And as the show progresses, we see how the fans and the media and other influences sort of affect her life and impact her senior year in high school, which she thought would be the best year in her life, and finds that, you know, with all this pressure and expectations put on her by other people, that things have changed a little bit. So we follow her story throughout, but we also follow the story of the two lawyers that get involved in the opposite sides of the legal battle concerning 6-on-6. And in my version, which is very fictional, the two lawyers are married to one another, so that adds a bit of conflict as well. We see a lot of the different types of fans that were associated with the game as well. So there are lots of subplots. And, of course, it's a musical, so you have people breaking into song, and you have a couple little love stories as well.
And part of the musical plays homage to a game that you refer to as Game of the Century. Can you tell me about
Sure.
that game?
You know, I'm not the best expert on this, but this will... One of the reasons we really wanted to do this show this summer was it is the 25th anniversary of the end of the game, which you've already mentioned, and it's the 50th anniversary of the Game of the Century, which featured Union Whitten and Denise Long, who's one of the greatest players ever in the state, against Everly and Jeanette Olson, another one of those fantastic players. And that whole season, people had been sort of building it up, hoping that these two teams would meet in the state championship. And indeed, they did. And it went into overtime. It was this epic battle that both teams scored more than 100 points. I think Jeanette Olson scored 70-some points herself. I don't have the facts right in front of me. But it was billed as this Game of the Century long before it actually even took place. And thankfully, it lived up to the expectations. And at that time, one of the really wonderful and unique things about girls basketball in Iowa was that it was being broadcast to not just Iowa television stations, but to television stations throughout the Midwest. So it really took on more than just, it was important to more than just Iowans at that time.
So in putting together this production, Allison, when, you know, I realize people want to be in a show. Have you had people try to get involved with the production because it's about 6-on-6 basketball, because it played an important role in their family history?
I know there is one member of the cast that remembers her daughter playing, and so for her, it definitely does have a soft spot in her heart. All of the younger actors have really no knowledge of 6-on-6, and so it's actually been kind of fun to educate them on the game and tell them some of the stories surrounding the game. Some of the more advanced actors, I'll say, have memories of it, and very fond memories as well.
The younger people, when you tell them about the game, how do they react?
I think a lot in disbelief, especially when Robert would tell a story about having to buy a scalper's ticket and sit in the very back row of vets. I just don't even think they can fathom that today.
And of course, I mean, Robert, you saw what was going on. You thought this should be a musical, but now you are really delivering to audiences not just a fun musical and, you know, an exciting story, but a piece of Iowa history. What do you want people to know about 6-on-6 girls basketball?
I think that's absolutely right. I think in addition to it just being entertaining and informative, it's helping to preserve the game, because we're getting to a point where fewer and fewer people are going to be able to remember, or that are going to be around, that remember playing or viewing the game itself. And so I think this is one way that helps to preserve the game for the future. People can, you know, hopefully this won't be the last production of the show, and so that, you know, people in the future can see, you know, a stage presentation, you know, roughly 2 hours of all kind of encompassing all of the history and tradition of the game into one quick evening of entertainment. And I think that that's one of the beautiful things about this production, is that it informs people about, I think, even people that think they know a lot about 6-on-6 girls basketball learn a lot from this show. But it's not presented in a documentary style. It's presented in a very entertaining, you know, plot-driven show. And so I think it's just one of those ways that we can keep the memories alive. And I love, you know, the first version of this game, the first version of the script, I should say, was more than the first person that read it, he said, you know, this is going to play about 4 hours long, because I had included so many stories from individuals that had told me things about the game that I wanted to include everything, and you finally get to a point where you realize, well, you can't include everything in the show, but there are other ways of getting that information out as well. So we try to just do a composite of all the, you know, just some of the wonderful things about the show. We have a pageant scene, so we have a big scene at Vets Auditorium where the, you know, we have the Parade of States and a whole big tribute to Iowa. We have the broom sweepers. We try to include as many of the visual elements of the game as well. So it's just, you know, it's both wonderful to listen to and watch, but it's a feast for the ears as well.
And, of course, this summer we've got this wonderful exhibit traveling the state. A lot of people are remembering their high school basketball days or their high school sports days with a lot of nostalgia, a lot of fondness. But the end of 6-on-6 girls basketball, while for some people that was a very sad event, for a lot of people it was really a tremendous victory for equality in girls and women's sports. Is that part of the show as well, Robert?
It is. We have so very early in the show we're introduced to a character that moves into Iowa from out of state. She's a great high school basketball player herself. She and her mother move to Iowa, unaware that Iowa plays 6-on-6. And so they are the ones that sort of initiate the lawsuit, the fictional lawsuit in our play. But there were actual legal battles associated with the game as well. And throughout the play, we kind of learn that side of the argument. And you start to, you know, realize that there were two very legitimate sides to this argument about whether or not the game should be continue to be played. And so we don't ever try to present it as, you know, one side is correct and one side is not. We try to show both sides of the story. And so definitely that Title IX controversy is a big part of the show.
In the show, Allison, I know that we talked about trying to teach basketball skills to your actors. They also have to make shots during the show. So they're singing, there's dancing, but they actually have to really be able to hit a basket, right?
Absolutely. And we're doing our best to set them up for success in terms of the plays that I am using. But we have some tricks up our sleeve just in case something goes awry.
You can change the outcome of the game.
Well, I know that in our last production, there was a point where the main character, Jill Lane, has to miss a free throw, and she kept making them. So the official was calling her over the line, so she had to keep trying to shoot that free throw and miss it, ultimately.
So when it comes to the actual performance, is that the element that gives you the most stress?
Probably so, yeah. That's kind of out of my control.
Well, Allison, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Allison Schaefer, director of 6-on-6, the musical, which will be performed by Urbandale Community Theater and Epic Stage Productions August 3rd through August 12th. There was recently another production in Guthrie Center. And Robert Ford, thank you.
Thank you.
And which piece of Iowa history will you be bringing us in musical form next?
Actually, I'm working on a musical about Jack Trice, so hopefully that's something you'll see soon.
Wonderful, and I'm sure we'd love to talk with you when that comes to fruition as well.
Thank you.
Robert Ford, creator and producer of 6-on-6, the musical. And again, a production by the Urbandale Community Theater and Epic Stage Productions will be August 3rd through the 12th, coming up here in just a few weeks. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. You can follow us on Twitter at Iowa Public Radio. You can get in touch with us anytime. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org is our email address. This is Talk of Iowa.